was Chadwick Boseman's performance in 42 that really made us take a second look. There is such an honor and dignity to the way that he played Jackie Robinson that we knew we needed for the character of T'Challa, the Prince of Wakanda.
Chadwick is an amazing actor and we thought would fit perfectly with the MCU.
Black Panther himself, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick, you know, he has a lot of depth. It was amazing as an audience member to look into his eyes and see what's going on.
We must find a way to look after one another as if we were one single tribe.
A lot of the things about the character are also true about Chad. He's very knowledgeable. He's an athlete, you know, martial artist. He's had a lot of experience playing roles that come with a lot of weight, you know. So I think he has a lot of weight to him. I think he brings all of that stuff to the role. But not to mention that he's incredibly gifted as an actor and as a performer, and also as a storyteller in his own right.
I am not king of all people. I am king of Wakanda. And it is my responsibility to make sure our people are safe.
Because he is so prepared as an actor, and because his character is sort of flawless on set, it forced the other actors who had scenes with him to kind of raise their game and go, okay, this guy is not taking anything for granted. He's really leaving it all out there. So we have to keep up with him.
What doesn't Chadwick bring to the character? I mean, he's regal and grounded, and he brings a gravitas to it. So all of this feeds his T'Challa, and I think he wore the crown with dignity.
Ibombe!
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 I've known him since I was about like 17, so I've known him for a really long time back in New York. He did the work, obviously. You know, I just think he did an incredible job being true to the character.
Wakanda forever!
Wakanda forever!
I had a great time with Chadwick. Just warmth and camaraderie came into it, of course, with a great deal of respect for his previous work. So when I looked at him with proud eyes, you know, they were as mother and also as comrade and colleague and Angela.
This is your time to be king.
I mean, Chadwick is just a powerhouse. He really is so talented. Every single movie he's made, there's kind of this internal, almost nobility.
The Black Panther has been the protector of Wakanda for generations.
He's such a soulful actor and so professional, so present. He really gives so much to the other person, and he's awesome. And his presence on set, I think, makes that kind of raises the stakes a little bit for everybody.
Chadwick is he's a really smart, interesting, dynamic guy, and I think he was not overwhelmed, but very surprised and somewhat taken aback by the amount of love. It ceased to become just about how well he inhabited the role and all that stuff. It's become part of our culture just as a symbol.
This welcome is one of the most amazing things I've ever experienced.
It's fun to watch just what it means to people. At times, like in my head, I'll be like, well, what does this do for the world? Like, actually, what is it? You know, is it actually valuable in this climate? And I have to say, yes, it actually is. Not because it makes people escape. I think when done right, it gives people hope. I found that it means a lot.
Hello out there, everyone in podcast land. Welcome back to the Front Row Podcast, the podcast for people who actually like movies, and a very special episode of the Front Row Podcast here. Like everyone in the entertainment world and probably the world at large, all of us at the Front Row Network were so amazingly shocked and saddened by the news of the passing of Chadwick Boseman at the age of 43. Of course, Chadwick was one of those actors in Hollywood that was just seemed larger than life. He had such a prolific catalog of films already in his repertoire, and of course made probably one of the biggest cultural impacts of the last decade in movies when he portrayed T'Challa, King T'Challa, the Black Panther, in the MCU's Black Panther film. You know, Chadwick was dealing with stage 3 and stage 4 colon cancer for 4 years, and nobody knew. Nobody knew about it. He was suffering with this disease silently, but he was doing chemotherapy in the midst of filming Black Panther, Infinity War, and Endgame for Marvel Studios, along with 21 Bridges, The Five Bloods, just an insanely... an insane amount of work and an insane amount of work ethic for a man that was going through his own cancer treatments. And at the same time, he was very, very big into visiting little kids and other patients with cancer. And I just imagine that that was so emotional for him to be able to be there to give hope to these people while he himself was dealing with the exact same disease. All of us at the network were just very, very shocked. It happened on Saturday night when the news broke. There's so many questions that ripple out from this, but those are not what we're here to do. This is a special episode of Remembering, the series where we remember those that we've lost in the entertainment world. And the shocking nature of this one just led us to want to do a bit more than our typical 5 to 10 minute episode of this series. And just the immense impact that Chadwick left behind. For me personally, you know, I can't imagine what it's like to be an African-American person and seeing finally a hero like the Black Panther in that movie, it being the first superhero film to be nominated for Best Picture and even winning the Screen Actors Guild Award for Best Picture. I can't imagine what that would have meant and what that did mean to all the African-American people in the United States and all around the world to see a hero like that that looked just like them. But, you know, Chadwick's accomplishments weren't just from the Marvel side of things and the superhero side of things. He portrayed Jackie Robinson in the film 42. He portrayed James Brown in the film Get On Up. One of the first things I ever saw him in was The Express and also Draft Day with Kevin Costner. Not the best movie, but he was great in every single thing that he was in. He just had this air about him. I remember when Kevin Feige was talking about hiring Chadwick and just how immensely big of a get that was for them and how they felt like they had just, you know, got the MVP of acting, basically, in their corner there to play T'Challa. And it really was that. I remember watching the El Capitan Phase 3 announcement when they brought him out there with Robert Downey Jr. and with Chris Evans on the stage after the Civil War announcement. That wasn't just a sense of like, you know, like, hey, we have this new character and here he is now. It was a purposeful thing to put him on that stage with those two guys, with the two standard bearers of Marvel, because it was this implicit announcement of like, this is going to be the guy going forward. You're going to need to know this guy. You're going to need to know this character. This is big. And I remember from that point on, Black Panther became my most anticipated film of Phase 3, and luckily it did not disappoint. Watching T'Challa be brought to life by Chadwick is one of my favorite movie memories of all time. And it just, you know, it's, we don't have these personal connections like other people in his life do, but we all feel like we own a part of these actors, especially those of us who grew up with superheroes and comic books, reading and watching, you know, just because those are our heroes. Those are the things. I, you know, growing up, comic books were my sense of morality. They taught me about right from wrong and how to be a man and how to stand up. And to see them brought to such vibrant life on screen, it guts you when your heroes are no longer there for you. And so that's what this episode is all about. We're going to be hearing from a few members of the Front Row Network, a few guests that we've had on in the past. And of course, at the beginning, you heard that wonderful tribute from Marvel Entertainment in the video they released. But this was what I was going to be thinking. After this, I'm going to read a few statements from some of the actors that worked with Chadwick and from some of the studios and prominent people that knew him and had met him before. After that, you're going to be hearing thoughts from Reggie Guyton, who is one of our frequent guest sponsors. spots on the Front Row Network. After that, you're going to hear Lou Hare, the host of Guilty Pleasures, give his thoughts on it. And then after that, you're going to hear the thoughts on the passing from Professor Tiffany Saunders. She's a professor at the University of Illinois in Springfield. And actually, we did an episode with her, an Oscar spotlight, all on Black Panther back in 2019. And then after that portion of her thoughts about his passing, we are going to replay the episode on Black Panther, because it was really more about the cultural impact of the movie as opposed to just a review of the film itself. So I'm going to read right now quickly some thoughts from some Marvel actors and some other people about his passing. Marvel Entertainment on Twitter, and this was Disney and all the Marvel division, said, "Our hearts are broken and our thoughts are with Chadwick Boseman's family. Your legacy will live on forever. Rest in peace." Don Cheadle, who of course played War Machine in the Marvel films, he tweeted, "I will miss you, birthday brother. You were always light and love to me. My God, forever and ever." And a few Wakanda Forever emojis there. Brie Larson, of course, who played Captain Marvel in the Marvel films, said that Chadwick was someone who radiated power and peace, who stood for so much more than himself, who took time to really see how you were doing and gave words of encouragement when you felt unsure. I'm honored to have the memories I have, the conversations, the laughter. My heart is with you and your family. You will be missed and never forgotten. Rest in power and peace, my friend. Robert Downey Jr., for the first time in a long time, tweeted, "Mr. Boseman leveled the playing field while fighting for his life. That's heroism. I'll remember the good times, the laughter, and the way he changed the game. Hashtag Chadwick forever." Former President Barack Obama said, "Chadwick came to the White House to work with kids when he was playing Jackie Robinson. You could tell right away that he was blessed to be young, gifted, and black, to use that power to give them heroes to look up to do it all while in pain. What a use of his years." Mark Ruffalo, who of course plays Bruce Banner, the Hulk in the Marvel films, "All I have to say is the tragedies amassing this year have only been made more profound by the loss of Chadwick Boseman. What a man and what an immense talent. Brother, you were one of the all-time greats, and your greatness was only beginning. Lord love you. Rest in power, King." Michelle Obama, of course, the wife and the former first lady of President Barack Obama, "Only Chadwick could embody Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, and T'Challa. He, too, knew what it meant to persevere, to summon real strength, and he belongs right there with them as a hero. For black kids and for all of our kids, there's no better gift to give our world." Current vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris, the senator from California, wrote, "Heartbroken, my friend and fellow Bison, Chadwick Boseman was brilliant, kind, learned and humble. He left too early, but his life made a difference. Sending my sincere condolences to his family." Oprah Winfrey said, "What a gentle, gifted soul, showing us all the greatness in between surgeries and chemo. The courage, the strength, the power it takes to do that. This is what dignity looks like." Lin-Manuel Miranda sent out, "Heartbroken for his family and friends, heartsick for the roles we'll never get to see him play. Grateful for every moment we had with him on screen. What a legacy, what a light." And finally, the Russo brothers, who of course directed him in Endgame and in Infinity War, "Chadwick was such an elegant man with great integrity and tremendous talent. He inspired an entire generation to stand up and be king. Honor him by emulating him. Show kindness and love to others. Share your talents in ways that impact. Always strive to be a light in the darkness." And with that, I will now turn it over to Reggie Guyton, who will turn it over to Lou Hare, then to Tiffany Saunders, and then to our Oscar Spotlight re-release of the Oscar Spotlight showcase of Black Panther. Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoy the rest of this episode remembering Chadwick Boseman.
Chadwick, thank you for creating universes that we were seen with dignity, with respect, powerful, larger than life, and with legacies. I don't have to explain the impact, because it can be seen in every child that went to the movie in costume, every child that says that Black Panther was his favorite, or their favorite, or her favorite. It can be said for the opportunities that you've left and created for other people, not just for actors and directors and storytellers, but for costumers, for young artists coming up, your impact was so great that it inspired multitudes of people, including myself, to be the best artist that they can be. Thank you for teaching us how to use up all that we have. I hope at the end of all of our lives that we can say that we used everything we got like you did. You will be sorely missed.
Hey folks, it's Lou. Just giving my thoughts real quick about the passing of Chadwick Boseman. I know you're going to hear from a lot of people on the front row, and I'll try to keep it brief at the risk of being repetitive or hitting the same notes. We haven't really talked about what everybody's going to talk about. So I just want to give you a quick thoughts about him as an actor and kind of what I think his legacy is. And when I think about his body of work and I think about him as an actor, the one thing that keeps popping up in my mind, or the word that comes up in my mind, is resolute. There, anytime you saw him on screen, whether it was as T'Challa or in The Five Bloods or any playing Thurgood Marshall or James Brown or Jackie Robinson, there was always a resoluteness in his face. And I like to use that word rather than maybe some intensity or anything like that, because I think any actor can be intense. But there's a look that he would have, a command and a presence that he brought to every role that he did, that I think is something that was innate in him. And it's given greater context when you consider what was going on in his real life while he was filming much of this. So just the sheer resolve that this man had to do these films, to play these roles while doing what, enduring what he was going through, most of which we don't know, we may never know, and that's not necessarily our business to say. But it's something that strikes me in every role he does, and I'm thinking it will strike me in every time I see him. I know most people, like myself, know him most playing T'Challa in Black Panther. I recommend that you look at his entire filmography. It's great, especially most recently, The Five Bloods. And I also think, as far as his overall legacy is concerned, you know, the legacy of Black Panther is something I don't think we can understate. I've said it numerous times on the podcast. It's my personally favorite Marvel movie, but beyond my thoughts on it, my thoughts are almost irrelevant to the greater cultural impact that the movie has. And I know we have a couple of other people on the pod that are going to speak to that in much better terms than I can, but you would have to be blind to have not seen the massive cultural tidal wave that happened because of that movie. And for Chadwick to take on that role, knowing what he was going through, and maybe not being sure he had much time on this earth, to take that on and to help steer the ship on that movie, to lead that movie, not just on screen, but as being kind of the figurehead of all the interviews, of the award show tours, and carrying that mantle. He carried the mantle of Black Panther in real life, much like T'Challa carried the mantle in the film. And to see him engage with children and a population and a group that were so eager to have that kind of representation, and for him to step up to the plate and put that weight on his shoulders and carry it and do it in the terms that I better than anybody I think possibly could have. And so that's something that I think we'll always have. And it's so sad to see someone leave us so young at 43, and to have such a, you know, very fruitful career ahead of him had he wanted to do that. But what I think is fascinating, and I think the thing that I'll leave you with, because it's kind of what struck me about him when thinking about him and his career, he has spent most of his career embodying strong Black icons: Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, and even T'Challa. And yes, I know T'Challa is a fictional character, but still one with great historical significance in the culture. And so for him to give his craft in service of telling those stories, it reminds me of when he talked about at a speech he gave to Howard University, his alma mater, he talked a lot about purpose and about how purpose was something that you would find as you went from job to job or situation to situation. Ultimately, your purpose would reveal itself over time. And I think his purpose clearly revealed itself. His purpose was to give voice to stories of these legendary Black figures, to tell their stories for a new generation, to connect with a new audience, to bring light to a character that had not been brought to the screen and give representation where there hadn't been any in the past, and to do so in a way with a charm and with a talent and a ferocity that was undeniable on screen and certainly undeniable off. And it seems to me that it would be fitting for this man who made a name for himself portraying these iconic Black figures to himself become one. And I think that is certainly true. I think his legacy, his iconography will live on well past. And I think he would be very happy if one day some young actor made a name for himself telling the story of Chadwick Boseman to a new audience. So thank you, Chadwick. Thank you for what you gave to us. Thank you for your talent and your grace. There are so many clips out there that I could recommend, but you will find them that will remind you of what a great special person he was in addition to being a great actor. So thank you for that. As a fan of your work, thank you for what you gave to us. And we will always remember you. We will always celebrate you, and just thank you.
I would like to start by saying I am incredibly grateful I was asked to provide commentary in light of Chadwick Boseman's sudden and unexpected passing. I often use words to process emotions and needed the time and space to work through some feelings. This certainly provided a start. I, like so many, was shocked to learn about Chadwick Boseman's death. Because we're in the midst of a global pandemic, I immediately thought the culprit was COVID-19. The true source, however, did not ease my pain. In fact, the exact opposite happened because he was so young. He was diagnosed well before the recommended age for a colon check. That's an important part of Chadwick Boseman's story, and I'm sure there will be calls to adjust those age markers to account for racial and ethnic differences in physical health outcomes. That's very important work. Still, I want to focus on the continued legacy of Black Panther, the movie. In the original podcast, I spoke about the profound impact this movie had on my son, a young Black male. He was 13 when the movie was released. We saw it multiple times in the theater, a combined 15 or so, and we pre-ordered the DVD. He was the first to learn of Chadwick Boseman's death in our house. He came out of his room with such purpose, I thought something was wrong with him. Instead, he was sharing the news. His voice was full of exasperation and disbelief. There was silence between us while we tried to process the news. Neither of us knew how he died at that point. After he returned to his room to gather more information, I was left alone in thought. My son is now 15. Last year, almost to the day of Chadwick Boseman's death, he changed his hair to look like Killmonger's. So I was learning of the actor who played Black Panther's death for my son, whose hair looks like Killmonger's. There was a lot of symbolism to unpack. Then to learn that day was also Jackie Robinson Day, and our first introduction to Chadwick Boseman was in 42, which I took my then 8-year-old son to see in the theater. Later that fall, he was part of a tap dance performance in which he portrayed Jackie Robinson. Chadwick Boseman was a huge part of his life during a time when his identity was being developed. I'm incredibly grateful for the positive images of Black men he provided my son and countless other young Black males. As we've come to learn, Chadwick Boseman was a real-life superhero. I can only imagine the cognitive shifts it must have taken for him to be playing Black Panther, a superhero, while facing his own mortality. His ability to pull that off demonstrates both his professionalism and brilliance as an actor, though I now wonder how much of that was actually acting. Every word he spoke in that movie now takes on new meaning. Discussions about the ancestral plane feel like conversations he was having with himself. Perhaps even more profound than what this movie did for little Black boys and girls is what this movie must have done for Chadwick Boseman, Black Panther himself. I hope the words he spoke at the ancestral tree in particular gave him comfort while shooting the movie. The movie is embedded in my brain and my son's brain. And while we haven't had the courage to rewatch it with this new information and through the lens that Chadwick Boseman knew his time on Earth was short, we will watch it again soon. The impact of this movie and Chadwick Boseman's legacy is even bigger than any of us knew. In my imagination, he watched Black Panther one more time to marvel at the profound impact and beauty of that film, while helping with the peaceful transition to the afterlife he talked about in the movie. It's the same transition he helped Killmonger through as he looked out on the beauty of Wakanda. I hope he crossed his arms and shouted with whatever strength he had left, "Wakanda forever."
Out there in podcast land, this is the Beyond the Mouse podcast, a member of the Front Row network of podcasts, and we particularly highlight Disney films and Disney properties. And so today we're going to be talking about the biggest Disney property in terms of the award season and revisiting the film Black Panther. And I'm really excited about this. I'm really excited to dive deep into this movie and talk a lot about the cultural significance of the film and how it reached a broader audience, I think, than even maybe Marvel and Kevin Feige had thought that it would. This is a wonderful film that we did a full disclosure on way back in February. It seems like This movie came out like 6 years ago because 2018 lasted forever. But
these February releases, man, they're getting good.
I know. But we are going to dive a little bit deeper into it now and look. We have the experience of hindsight here, and we can talk a bit more about the impact that the film had and how much it made at the box office and all of that. And I have two wonderful people with me. The first I'll introduce is our illustrious editor-in-chief, Jeremy Geckner.
Hello, everyone. I'm excited to be here because Black Panther rules. And everyone who thinks differently, you can, I guess, think what you want. I don't care.
We don't get the boss on the Beyond the Mouse podcast very often.
It's true. It's true. I'm too busy, like, wrangling everything else. But I love this show.
You're too busy watching Are You Afraid of the Dark?
This is true. My wife and I do an Are You Afraid of the Dark podcast. So, you know, and it's the one you want in your life that you never knew you needed. So,
and what's it called?
Are You Afraid of the Podcast, of course.
There you go. So check that out if you are a listener of Beyond the Mouse. Go over and listen to that, and of course all the other shows on the Front Row as well. And then I'm really excited to introduce a new guest to the podcast, Tiffany Saunders, and she is professor of sociology at the University of Illinois Springfield.
Yes.
So how are you?
I'm good. This is my very first podcast.
You've never been on a podcast before?
Never.
Oh, yes. That's so great. That's actually a shame. Because I also work at UIS, and as my day job, podcasting doesn't pay well enough yet.
No, not yet.
Right, you know. But I've had conversations with you about this movie in particular, and I thought that you would be a wonderful guest to dive deep on this because you've seen this movie probably 800 times.
Probably.
Okay. And at least...
That's like me with Infinity War.
At least 75% of that was in theater, right?
It was.
Wow. You saw it in theaters a lot.
My son and I think saw it a combined 15 times in the theater.
That's great.
While it was on its run. I think several times a week at times. And then we bought the DVD and now we own the DVD and we've watched it several times since owning the DVD. So
yeah, absolutely.
Just on loop.
It is on loop.
What do you want to watch now? Black Panther.
Yeah.
it's just always going on.
Exactly. In the background.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got a killer soundtrack.
It does. We love it.
We can talk about that too.
Yes.
But we have a question that we ask guests, and we don't prepare you beforehand. This is so every first-time guest on the podcast.
This too, like.
But what is your favorite movie? Now, let me tell you, most people are like, but I have 12 of
That's
them.
True.
So we're trying to get you to narrow it down. It doesn't necessarily need to be, you know, any particular genre of movie, anything like that. Just when someone says, what's your favorite movie? What's the first thing that comes to your head? Because that's usually probably the right answer, right?
I wish that I had thought of something. I feel like if you had asked me this a few years ago, it would have been something by like Samuel L. Jackson. Like I really liked a lot of his movies, but I really feel like today that I would answer Black Panther.
Oh.
And I think that I would say that because I've watched the impact that it had on my son. And I think that that's really, really important. And so, I think because of that, that's probably what I would say today.
That's really cool.
And I know it's a new movie and I know I'm here to talk about Black Panther, but I really think that that's, you know, pretty, I don't know. That's what I would say today.
It's a good answer for this podcast. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. And I wanted to bring you on in particular because you have started to even talk about this in your classes and looking at this from a broader sociological perspective. You know, movies do have a very big impact on culture, and this is one that, truly does. And that kind of leads us into first talking about its position in the award season,
yeah.
Because generally we think of the Oscars in particular as being more of a art house, art-minded
Why
award.
Why would we ever think that, Greg?
Right.
Why would we ever think that?
But also, there are some movies that throughout the time and the history of the Oscars have been those cultural touch points and those cultural milestones. And that's what tends to break through that mold. So it doesn't need to be The Favorite or, you know, Vice or these other
Just
movies
say
that
Roma.
Are...
You know you want to say Roma.
Roma. These very Oscar-baity type films to break through. You can every now and then have an award for the cultural impact of something like The Lord of the Rings getting so many Oscar wins for Return of the King, things like that. So, Jeremy, you're our award season guy. So talk to us about where they're at as far as the award season goes and how big that set award win was.
Yeah, so like it's interesting because most of the time when you have a comic book property that's very well reviewed, the Academy will give it a special effects Oscar, definitely, but it will also give it a few token nominations. Here's a sound design nomination, here's a costume design, a production design,
makeup.
Yes, always some of these technical awards, and it's like, there, be happy with this. But what's very interesting is that you're right, like just the mere fact of the, I think Black Panther got 7 Oscar nominations, including the Best Picture nomination. So that is in and of itself. I mean, it is the first superhero property to get that Best Picture nomination. But so even that in and of itself is a huge thing. But then you start getting into the award season. And so it's winning these special effects ones over something like Avengers Infinity War, which nothing against the special effects in Black Panther, but I mean, come on now. So that shows you like, that shows you though that like, okay, the Academy is definitely going to give it what it's done to all these other comic book films. But now the Screen Actors Guild comes around, and for those of you who don't know, that is the guild of literally just all of the actors, television and movie actors in Hollywood, and they make up the biggest block of Academy Award voters, by far the biggest block. And their version of Best Picture is Best Ensemble Cast, and Black Panther ended up taking that prize at the SAG Awards. And honestly, it was a genuine shock, a very genuine shock. I don't know how any of you guys felt about it, but it was legitimately crazy there that happened. And now you've got basically four separate movies have won the four biggest awards so far in Green Book, Roma, Bohemian Rhapsody, and now Black Panther. So literally nobody knows what the hell the Academy is thinking right now. But that win among the biggest block of Academy voters is a big deal because they don't weight their system. That means it got the most first place votes. The Academy does weight their system, weight their voting. So even if a bunch of people voted for Black Panther number two, I think it's got a pretty good outside chance right now of being that spoiler and being that movie that can take Best Picture.
Well, and I think that it has a lot of momentum going into it, because going into the nominations, everyone was saying that Netflix was making such a huge push for Roma, and they want to be the first streaming service to have. I don't know. Netflix executives might disagree with me. I'm sure that they think it's a lovely artistic piece and that it's highlighting a great director who probably will end up walking away with the Best Director Oscar. But I think Netflix's big game in this is wanting to be the first streaming service to win a Best Picture. Yes. They want to beat Amazon. They want to beat Hulu.
Absolutely. And I mean, if you look at it, they are by far putting the most money into their campaign right now, into their Oscar campaign, and they have enough money to do such things. But what's interesting is that Marvel is putting a huge push, and have been since about September, for Black Panther, and they really put a big push out there for Michael B. Jordan too. Now, unfortunately, he didn't quite get there with the voting for Best Supporting Actor, but I'm telling you, this is going to be a horse race all the way up until the very end. We only have the BAFTAs left, the British Academy Awards, to really kind of gauge what the Best Picture is looking like. And if I had to bet, I would say probably Bohemian Rhapsody has the inside track there just based on their subject matter. So, and I don't think that's got a chance to win Best Picture at the Oscars. So this is literally going to be one of the biggest toss-up years.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about, like, particularly Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody are two other contenders that have some questionable things going on outside of the movie, you know, with the allegations that are continuing to resurface year after year about Bryan Singer, and then also with the writer director of
Peter
Green
Farrelly,
Book, who is not exactly the best on social media.
The writer of Green Book was the lead character's son,
right.
And apparently he has some, let's just say, sketchy political views. And you're right. And then the director, Peter Farrelly, apparently likes exposing himself on set. So, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's going around about this right now.
And even outside of that, those two movies, we were just talking before we started recording about Green Book. And I haven't seen that yet. I hope to before the Academy Awards. But I can comment now on Bohemian Rhapsody, having seen it. It is a very vanilla, basic portrayal of that story. It doesn't really dive deep. It doesn't. And I think that that's because Queen kind of controls that story, and they don't want a negative image about Freddie Mercury out there. And it's not that I was wanting a negative image of Freddie Mercury. I just wanted a human image,
right.
You know, and I don't think that that movie delivered that.
And it's the same thing, and Tiffany and I were talking about this with Green Book too, but it's a similar problem. You don't give a full context,
right.
And you give us something that's enjoyable to watch,
right.
But doesn't feel deep enough to actually make an impression on us. I think that's what you were feeling.
Yeah,
with that.
So I liked Green Book. It was fine. But having known the history of the Green Book, I just thought they missed an opportunity to really delve into what the Green Book was, how it shaped people's experiences in the South, especially people of color.
Yeah.
We've even seen a resurgence of the Green Book, so a new version of the Green Book in today's sort of day and age, because we're living in sort of times that are less than ideal. I mean, not that we've ever lived in an ideal time, but we're seeing some of the resurgence of those 1950s and 60s era sort of race relations. And so over the last few years, there's been a resurgence of this idea that there are certain places you shouldn't stop in along the way. And like, that's really the history that was lost. And as I said before we were kind of recording, maybe the movie should have been titled something else since they didn't really focus on the Green Book.
Right. Like, Craig hasn't seen it yet, but you're right. Like, it is such a throwaway part of the movie, and it's borderline insulting a little bit, because when you read about what it was and why it existed, it's not some, like, here's a travel guide. It was literally, follow this or you may die.
Right.
And that's an important story to tell, I think far more important than the one we got told, even though that was a great story to tell. So I very mixed feelings about that, but I think that general consternation about those leading contenders and the ones that, you know, Green Book won the grand prize at the Sundance, so like that kind of mixed bag of emotions there with these films means that there's an opening for something like Black Panther, and especially with the cultural impact that it made, because Marvel movies are always going to be successful. They're always going to make $500 million at least at the box office. They're always going to get close to a billion worldwide. But this one, And I mean, like, I can't even really speak to this because, you know, I am a Midwest white guy, but I imagine the impact of seeing that on screen, and it's the fact that it's 99% black cast and crew. I mean, you can't divorce the movie from that, and it's an amazing thing to see.
Yeah.
That's why we ended up in the theater as many times as we did. I really felt like, as raising a young black male, that if he asked to see it, we were going to go and see it. Yeah. Because there was something that was speaking to him, and I felt like that was a really important. Whatever he was taking away, because I haven't sat down to ask him about it, mm-hmm. but whatever he's taking away, it's definitely making a very profound impact. And in fact, I mean, we're not talking about this movie, but he had the same reaction to the Amazing Spider-Man, the Miles Morales version.
Oh, yeah.
So he saw that one. Yeah, that's what it was, Into the Spider-Verse. So I think he saw that one like 3 times in the theater.
Which,
and so
that's about to win Best Animated Feature as well. And rightfully.
Sure. Yeah,
sure. So,
well, to put a cap on the award talk and then kind of really move into Black Panther, I just think that I can say definitively, now, if the Academy nominates Black Panther for this, because they've got a certain history with comic book movies, okay? So Dark Knight, we all thought that Dark Knight was such an amazing film. Obviously, they posthumously gave Heath Ledger an Oscar for that portrayal of the Joker. That movie is really the movie that people would argue brought about the change from 5 Best Picture nominees to 10,
yeah.
because Dark Knight wasn't nominated. Mm-hmm. And so then last year, I was so annoyed by the Academy because they did not nominate Wonder Woman for Best Picture. Mm-hmm. And then every segment of the Oscars, they mentioned Wonder Woman and how great of a movie it was. It's like, well, if it was that great of a movie and you're going to have Gal Gadot go around and do all these bits, recognize the film. Right.
Yeah. They like made mention of it in the broadcast like 15 times,
right.
But it's not good enough to nominate. But to say your fact as well, though, is that, I mean, how many movies can boast that they made the Academy try to make a new category of award?
That's what I was going to say. So then now this year they come out with this idea, oh, I don't know if we can nominate a superhero movie. So we better float this idea of a popular
best
film
popular
category.
Film.
And that of course died. Glorious death.
Idea heap. Like, come on. If it's good enough, if it's a good movie, it's a good movie. The subject matter shouldn't matter. And that's the crowning achievement of Black Panther as a film.
Correct.
I mean, if we want to start getting into that, is that, yes, we're dealing with superheroes. We're dealing with fantastical elements. But at its core is a really human story that all races can really relate
to,
I think.
Right. And so my definitive statement about the Academy Awards is that if I have to, in the history of superhero movies, continue to say Academy Award winning film Suicide Squad, but I am not able to say Academy Award winning film Black Panther, I will be very, very, very angry at the Academy.
Dude, Scott, just never going to let that go, are
no,
you?
No, I cannot believe Suicide Squad. I get it was for
makeup. Oscar-winning film, man.
But it's an Oscar-winning film, yes. Anyway, so let's dive into Black Panther. And I think it's good to start with the impact that the film had kind of after its release, because here it is, an origin, really not necessarily an origin story, I guess. They do kind of weave that in. Ryan Coogler does a great job of kind of giving you the narration behind Wakanda
and
the prologue.
The so cool.
But it's not necessarily an origin story. It is in a way. We've already met T'Challa during Civil War, so we aren't necessarily being introduced to this character. But this is a movie that is now the highest domestic grossing Marvel film, mm-hmm. out, and that includes Infinity War. So you have this movie that was the culmination of 20 movies. It didn't make as much domestically as Black Panther. Now, you and your son might have been the reason for that.
Probably.
You're that extra $7 or $8 million, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
But truly, all jokes aside, this was just an amazing crowning achievement for everyone involved. And let's talk a bit about why that happened. I mean, I've mentioned before, in subsequent podcasts, that there are like, there's Wakanda Con that's being planned.
Yeah, that's so cool.
We went last summer.
Yes.
Oh, you did?
No,
we
way.
Went to
you
the inaugural Wakanda Con last
so
summer.
So, what was it?
Well,
what was it all about?
So, it was in downtown Chicago. So, that was the inaugural one. We were unfortunately not there for the entire week. We were only there for a couple of days. just because of previous commitments, but it was amazing. So the people, it was just like a regular Comic Con, as I understand. It was our first con, Comic Con, so I don't really know.
They're pretty similar.
but it was just really amazing to see the people, all the people that came out and that were all dressed up, and they had like, I guess the best way to describe it is like a little martial arts demonstration for the kids, and then they could go and try some of the, you know, Black Panther like moves and things like that, panels and things like that. And then I think what was really cool is they did a really good job of bringing in like the local Chicago community. So like the Children's Museum of Art and Justice was there, and they were doing some things for the kids. And then there was like this whole sustainability aspect of it as well. So then you could go and make sustainable things that then you could plant in your backyard and things like that. So it was really capitalizing on everything that the movie had to offer as well, in a really cool sort of Comic-Con way.
That's a really neat thing to bring in, especially the sustainability, because you look at Wakanda and that whole traditional versus modern fight that's going on throughout the movie, and you see that they are so they think of the land as so sacred, and particularly that temple that T'Challa ends up, that's, you know, where you go to become the Black Panther, to become king. And it's just really cool that they brought all those areas together. And then I know that there were also, leading up to the midterm elections, there was a big Wakanda Forever voter drive, trying to particularly engage Black Americans to go out and get registered to vote and get involved. And so,
which was like, hugely successful, too.
Not many movies that kind of spurred
engage
that.
Engage voter campaigns? No, not many.
You know, and so I just think that that's an incredible achievement. But can you speak to some of the impact in particular communities, but also just the broader sense impact that something like a movie like this can have and has had?
Yeah. So I think what's really interesting about this movie is that it obviously did well, and it did well because it would have taken a cross section of this country to go and see it and support that movie.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we know from this historically that the Black community does come out and support. Like they're really known to put their dollar behind things that they believe in. So I haven't dove into the numbers a lot, but I bet if we went in and looked, there was a substantial number of Black people who came out and saw this movie. And I know people who saw it just as many times as my son and I did. It was just that big of a deal. But I think what we get is this juxtaposition of this movie that's primarily Black characters, a primarily Black cast, against the backdrop of a country that's having really difficult race relations right now. And so, but what you see is positive images of Black people, positive images of Africa, it's a fictional country or place, but, you know, I think most of us in our minds placed it in Africa, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is a juxtaposition against, you know, what the president called like the shithole countries and things like that, right?
Yeah.
And so what I think that movie did, I know, especially for the conversations that were had in our household, is what could have Africa have been had it not been sort of stripped of its resources and things like that. And is this what Africa was before it was stripped of its resources? And then you just get these powerful people. And in particular, my son wanted to see it, I'm sure, because of Black Panther. He really also fell in love with Killmonger as a character. But I think also subtly what he was able to see is like strong Black women as well. The women sort of supporting and being an integral part of the Wakandan community. They're the warriors. They're the fighters. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that image is far from the way that it works in America and in many Black communities more broadly. So the women do end up being sort of the backbone of families and communities, fighting for their community, fighting for their family. So that was just a visual representation of that fight, like a literal fight, versus the sort of metaphorical fight that we're kind of tasked with doing.
All brought this up in your Geek Year in Review, that when you were discussing Black Panther, that Shuri is, it's been said by Kevin Feige and others that
that she is the smartest person in the Marvel universe, right? At least the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
What's really great is that debate started raging, like who's smarter, Shuri, Tony, or Bruce, or whatever. And yeah, Kevin Feige acted like it was a non-question. Like, right. He's like, no, it's Shuri. It's right. Pretty easy. And what's funny is like when you see her scene in Infinity War, and you know she's scanning over Vision and trying to figure out the Mind Stone, and literally she looks at like one of the smartest men on the planet, is just like, well, why'd you do it this way? He literally has no answer. He's just like, I don't know. And her line is the best one there, too. He's just like, oh, I'm sure you did your best. She's like 17 years old, and she's like the smartest person of all time. It's amazing that that's there.
So this movie not only showed women as warriors and as really guarding T'Challa and like that last line of defense for Wakanda in such a strong role, but also as this just incredibly intelligent character that's just like leading people from such a young age. And like you said, she's what? She's
17, I think, is what she's supposed to. But like, also just the fact that it's not an issue. Nobody cares.
Exactly.
None of the elders care that she's leading this. None of the you know, men who are the shepherds that are also warriors out there on the front lines. They don't care. Yeah. They don't care that the 17-year-old girl is there. Because you know what? You freaking shouldn't.
Yeah.
Like, all right?
Yeah. It reminds me of the lyric from the song Glory from the movie Selma. And there's that line where Common says, it takes the wisdom of the elders, but young people's energy. And so I think about like that movie really kind of portraying that as well. Yeah. So you have the wisdom. The elders are there. They're carrying on the traditions. They're doing all these things. But it takes the young people to kind of like keep the country going and move it forward and things like that.
Which is a huge issue throughout the through line and the storyline of this is that Chadwick Boseman's character, T'Challa, is really focusing more on that tradition. And I listened to the audio commentary with Ryan Coogler, which is so great, by the way. You know, sometimes those audio commentaries can kind of drag on, but he did such a great job of breaking down this movie. And he also had his production designer, and I am blanking on her name, but she also provided such great insight on this audio commentary. So definitely
she's up for an Oscar and she might win it.
Go back and check that out for sure. But one of the things he talked about is that particularly in the interactions between T'Challa and Shuri, they wanted to make sure that there was this tension between traditional and modernization. So she is very much like, well, we should bring Wakanda to the world and promoting that. But even in little things, like they brought up the idea of the first time that you meet her, they're talking about his what he's wearing.
Yeah.
And his footwear. And he's wearing these sandals. and then she makes the awful pun about sneakers. That's just so great.
Right.
Yeah.
It's so well delivered.
Well, but I mean, like, that.
I call them sneakers. You know why? Do you know what you do in them?
Yeah.
She doesn't answer it.
No.
It's all right.
No, her portrayal is great, too. I mean, Letitia Wright, like, is so good in this movie because she does have that youthful exuberance, like you said. She's somebody who sees the world and literally just says, why not?
Right.
And, yeah, of course we can do that. Just give me a little time. Or something like that. She sees no impossibilities. And that's that kind of youthful optimism that the world really needs.
Exactly.
And you're also right, though, the central theme of T'Challa fighting against his basically everything he's known and held dear, you know, because losing his father the way he does in Civil War and having to wear that mantle and be that leader, but then also realizing that the people you idolize, the heroes you have, they make mistakes. They are not perfect. And, you know, like, it's up to you to decide what you're going to do with that information.
Right.
I mean, that scene he has with the spirit of his father in the Panther plane, I think it's called, but, like, that is just amazing. And it's Chadwick Boseman showing once again why he's a freaking amazing actor.
Right.
And just like that, I think that's always what I love most about comic book movies. They're taking it so seriously. And that's when the heightened emotions and the heightened reality can really hit you home with that. But
and that's why I'm so glad to see some of the recognition start to come in, because this is more than just a comic book movie. And, you know, if one of the themes are this tradition versus modernization and moving into the new world, the other overarching theme of this is colonization really what that has done to the world over time. I mean, the first time you see Eric Killmonger, he calls the woman at the museum a colonizer. And what's interesting about that, again, going back to what Ryan Coogler said when they were putting this film together, one of the things he mentioned was that colonization in this movie is represented by the color blue. So if you look, a lot of their costuming choices, if you look at someone and they're dressed in blue, including Killmonger at the beginning of the movie, because he's kind of having to put on that persona of...
He's got the jean jacket. Right? Yeah.
Exactly. So anything in this movie that is more blue and blue-green is kind of representing that idea of colonization. And
just think about this, people. You hear what he just said?
Right.
You hear what he just said about the director of a comic book movie?
Correct.
These are not like just popcorn entertainment anymore. These are deep things, man. Like, that's an amazing thing to put in there. And I need to watch it again
now. I know. I'm like, well, I saw it a lot of times. I didn't catch that.
I'll tell you what. That audio commentary, I was just incredibly impressed with the level of detail and what they were doing in this film. And just some of the ideas that they had. And they really thought about everything. And I, you know, some movies are kind of haphazardly put together and they miss big plot lines or through lines. And this, you could really tell that they wanted to get it right. They wanted to nail it. They go into talking about the costume design and my goodness,
which
I love
better freaking win the Oscar.
I love me my Disney properties. And I thought Mary Poppins Returns had an amazing costume design.
It did.
But this has to win. Yeah. I mean, it just has to win.
I mean, traditional thinking at the Oscars is you go with the most hoop skirts, anything right. that's in the Renaissance or the Victorian era. And we do have a few of those.
Well, and there's a lot of praise coming to Mary Queen of Scots because I guess it's all done in denim. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie, but it's a medieval tale done with denim.
But I mean, like, you see, I think that this is such a harder task because you're creating a cultural, like, fashion sense. You know, I think she drew on so many different cultures and like futuristic Afro culture too. It's like you merge all these things together to make these garments, and it's ridiculously fun to watch, like, and to look at.
And Bailey mentioned this during your Geek Year in Review, but he said that when he went to opening night, there was a lot of people wearing traditional African clothing, and so like that just adds even another layer to this movie of the importance of it. But did you run into that at all in your experience?
We definitely saw people who were dressed in traditional or what we would
what you assume
like
would be traditional.
Yeah.
There's that as well. And then just even leading up to the movies, if you remember, there were all those hashtags like I'm going to wear this or how I'm showing up to Wakanda or to Black Panther. And so there were like people literally planning out their outfits, right?
Yeah.
And you don't get that a lot, especially in a superhero movie, right? Like planning how you're going to dress in order to sort of represent. And it's not about representing Black Panther. It was about representing a culture.
Yes, right.
So that's the difference. Because I think when we go to movies and people dress up, they dress up as characters, right? So when you go and see a Star Wars movie, we've been to some of those openings too. People dress up as characters.
Yes.
So this
would,
exactly. Exactly. But this one, they were dressing up as a culture. It was about portraying a culture. And I think that was significantly different for this movie.
Well, and that speaks to a bigger point about the movie, which is the representation. I mean, like, it is long overdue that the African-American community gets that representation in the form of a superhero film. And, I mean, I don't think it was a deliberate choice or anything. You know, Marvel had to be very strategic about what characters they pushed forward. I mean, hell, when they made Iron Man, they thought that was a dumb choice because Iron Man was seen as really uncool.
You know,
he was seen as the Marvel B team. But, you know, like, I think the way that they went about it, you know, introducing him first in Civil War so that we don't have to spend a bunch of time saying, here's who this person is, and making him so freaking integral and cool in that movie, you know, like, I want to know more about this guy. I want to know more about this world. And that, and just seeing that representation, like, you know, again, I'm a white dude from the Midwest. I don't know what that is, but seeing my friends, my African-American friends that had that finally.
Right.
And it wasn't just this is a cool movie with a black lead. It was, you're right, just a moment in time where this is changing the game now. So everyone get ready.
Right.
Well, and you talked about the experience that your son's having going to, and like you said, you haven't necessarily sat him down and talked to him about it, but I distinctly remember the first superhero film that, I mean, I saw some superhero films, obviously. I saw like the old Captain America and stuff that. But the one that I remember clinging on to a lot, it's because I love this film to this day, is The Rocketeer.
Mm.
But But like thinking about like when I was that age, you know, somewhere in between 8 and 12 years old, and being able to like fly around my house as the Rocketeer and how cool that was. Well, I get a lot of opportunities for that, you know, because a lot of the superheroes that are put forward are action stars. They're white, right. You know, and so
a lot of just heroic figures in movies.
Right.
Hello, Green Book.
Right.
Right. But so, you know, we've been saying or speculating how much that must mean to this community, but would you mind speaking to that a little bit?
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. And I, you know, I think, again, I don't know how he felt, but I know how I felt as a parent getting to share that with him as well. So there's like a sense of pride that we can sit together and enjoy this really, really positive representation of like our people and our culture and all, and the greatness that we obviously know exists amongst our people and our culture, a greatness that's you know, sometimes stifled because of the other things that are going on sort of in society. And so just watching, not only just understanding how I feel about it, watching how my friends responded to it. And that's my friends, both sort of black and white. Like, this is not a, I think that's the great thing about this movie, is that it transcends the race, the black-white race dichotomy, or any other, you know, we can add a number of different races in there. And so that's powerful and that's moving. And it's something that I can show my son too. I mean, he's into the arts side of things, but he tumbles and he does other things as well. And so I could show him and say, look at that. Like, look how they're flying across the screen. Uh-huh. You know, that's someone's body that actually had to do that tumbling, you know? And so there's potential out there. Look at this great community, this great place that they've built. Look how they support one another. Let's talk about why you don't hate Killmonger. Like, what is it about this guy that you don't actually hate? Mm-hmm. And obviously, he's not the only person who didn't hate him, right? There's aspects of what Killmonger is saying that, you know, there's aspects of what he's doing that you totally understand and you empathize with, right? So he's also the character that didn't get all of the potential as well, because he's stripped away from his native land, right? So there's some dealing with that as well. So let's talk about that. And then let's talk about, you know, there started this hashtag that was like, Killmonger wasn't wrong. And it's like, why wasn't he wrong? Like, let's talk about why we're not upset with him. And we had sort of the same reaction moving forward a little bit and talking about Thanos as well. We're like, why are we not really upset with Thanos? No, like, why is he not totally wrong?
Marvel killed it with their villains this year.
That's the thing.
I said it on our Geek podcast. I was like, I don't know which of these villain turns I like more.
Right.
And I mean, it's kind of hard to, I mean, you can't, you have to call him that, I guess, but Killmonger in particular is, again, that face of, like, you get the reasoning.
Yep.
You don't agree with the tactic, but you get the reasoning, and you understand the anger, and you understand the fire that burns within him. And the fact that Michael B. Jordan can at the same time make you hate yet sympathize with the same guy at the same action, you know? Like, it's just amazing, because every single time in this movie he does a villainous thing, Coogler is very quick to go also show us another scene of trying to get it.
Yeah.
Like, right when he, I think it's when he comes out of the dream plane and he sees his father in the apartment in Oakland. You know, that's a crazy great scene.
Yep.
And a lot of sadness and deep stuff about fathers and not having fathers. That's another huge thing that this deals with. And then he comes out of it and you're like, oh man, I totally get it. And then he just burns the whole temple down. And it's like, no, man. Like, I was liking you for a second.
Yeah.
So yeah, but that was, his character is so impressive in this. And it's not just because of the performance. I mean, it's just well written.
Or he takes out Claw, and that, you know, it's always, like, obviously, murder's not necessarily a cool thing.
Right.
But at the same time,
yes,
like,
the front row is against murder, just to know.
He brings Claw's body back to Wakanda, and that is him, like, saying, you know, this man who tried to steal your vibranium, this man who tried to...
Who killed your people.
Kill your people to, like, basically terrorize you, I got him for you, you know? And, Michael B. Jordan, just he is someone that is really truly becoming my favorite actor because of the way that he can portray all these different roles. Creed 2 was incredible this year as well. There was a scene in Creed 2, and not to go on too much of a tangent, but when he's trying to put his baby to bed for the first time without his wife. And it was just like soul crushing for me because I was just there.
Right.
You know? I know and, this feeling.
And oh my goodness. And he, that was one of the big major Oscar snubs to me is that Sam Rockwell got a yeah. Oscar nomination for a bad George W. Bush impression. And Michael B. Jordan didn't get a Oscar nom for Killmonger in supporting actor because this character was so well developed.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's terrible that spoilers, of course, you've seen this film by yeah. now, but that we lose him at the end.
Right.
Well, yeah, there's some speculation as to whether or not we lost him. Right.
We lost
because
him.
You don't see him.
It's a Marvel movie. The villain's dead.
Yeah.
But the beauty of that final scene, though,
agreed.
Even the fact that, like, just take it from the fact that T'Challa, after battling this man to the death, this man that tried to kill him, almost did, like, all of a sudden now he's sitting here after defeating him, and the only emotion he has is sympathy
right.
towards him. He doesn't have hate. He doesn't have vengeance.
Right.
He just feels sorry for this
yeah.
guy and takes him up to see this beautiful Wakandan sunset. And, I mean, it's just gorgeous imagery that we're playing with here.
Yeah, and again, it's part of him missing out on this aspect of who he
yeah.
is, right? Because this is also just like a sort of ancestry story as well. So it's the juxtaposition of growing up, knowing your heritage, knowing where you're coming, where you came from, getting to live in the spoils of that for T'Challa versus, you know, Killmonger, whose that heritage is largely lost. That's the story of African-American people,
yeah.
right?
Well, and he lost both his parents at a young age.
Yeah.
His parents are stripped away.
Yeah.
He's got no one to guide him. He tries to find, you know, that father figure anywhere
yep.
he can, goes to the military, but his anger just overtakes
yep.
him. Like, it's an amazingly
yeah.
metaphorical story there. I mean, that's not really. I mean, a lot
right.
of people have felt that.
Exactly. And then he delivers that line at the end, which carries us all forward, you know, like, bury me in the ocean mm-hmm. with my ancestors. Like, I remember, like, physically gasping when he said
yeah.
that. Like,
mm-hmm.
that was a profound statement where I was like, yeah, like, that's the slave trade, the Middle Passage, all those
uh-huh.
people that we lost, you know, coming from Africa to America and,
yeah.
and other places.
I have like a weird take on why T'Challa does what he does at the end, bringing Wakanda into the world. I think it's Killmonger that makes him do that.
Yeah.
I don't think it's...
Shuri?
I mean, I know Shuri and Nakia, I think her name is.
Mm-hmm.
But Lupita Nyong'o's
yeah.
character, like,
mm-hmm.
freaking awesome Lupita Nyong'o. But... You know, like, yes, they're, like, pulling him there. And also, you know, the fact that his father abandons Eric, you know, and doesn't bring him back. But I think it is that line.
I agree.
That makes him see, like, no, I, not to go Spider-Man with it, but you have much. Much is expected
yeah.
of you. Great power comes great responsibility. And I think he sees what he could have been.
Yeah.
I think you're right. There's just... You live in this luxury, this gorgeous sunset of Wakanda, and this kid had to grow up in, you know, the streets of Oakland at a terrible time to be there.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think that is really what gets him there. He sees himself in Killmonger.
Yeah, like, it's part of a larger community. And I think that that's, you know, also... Obviously, an underlying theme throughout as well, right? Like, what is your responsibility to the larger, greater
yep.
community? And so I think while he was hearing those messages before, I think you're right. It's Killmonger that really pushes him over the edge to say,
yeah.
oh, okay.
Because it's not like, you know, it's after Killmonger's death. All
right.
of a sudden now he's walking with Nakia and he's like, yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
And it's not... so
not
I mean,
the first
like,
time he heard it.
Not the first time he heard it, but finally a stark example.
Exactly.
I mean, that's what, from Batman Begins, people need dramatic examples to
yeah.
shake them out of apathy.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
yeah, it's just an amazing turn, and I agree with you. It's unfortunate that what we view as lesser, still good, but lesser performances,
mm-hmm.
Certainly less deep performances got nominated over him.
So one of the other things, particularly about Killmonger, that Coogler talks about in interviews and then also in this audio track as well, is that they specifically call Killmonger by so many different names
mm-hmm.
in the movie. And they did that because he's basically like, think about the term African-American and how many terms have
yeah.
that people have been called so many terms over the last, you know, so it's almost like even trying to find your identity in, well, am I a Black American? Am I an African American? Right. You know, and kind of going back through that history too. So just things that were thought of in this movie that are so incredible. But one more touch point that I wanted to talk about before we, and we're already starting to, we could talk about this movie for hours and hours,
clearly.
I feel like, but what Coogler identifies as the most important scene in the movie, and actually when he showed it to Francis Ford Coppola, he also said it's the most important scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. And this is when really T'Challa goes back to Forrest Whitaker's character and is talking about finding out about what happened in Oakland. And Forrest Whitaker delivers the line, "We have to maintain the lie." And how that is, again, talking about traditions and talking about we have to shroud ourselves from the world as opposed to allowing us to talk and really, truly, like Killmonger says, I mean, rule the world, like because they could. They are the most powerful nation on Earth that no one knows about.
I mean, I'm sorry, but when galactic threats are coming, all the Avengers go to Wakanda.
So I just think that that's such an interesting take on it kind of flips the script on what we would think of as this poor African country that, you know, because they even talk about it during Civil War when they're introducing T'Chaka to the assembly. They're like, I think, I don't know if they say the poor African country of Wakanda
something like that.
But I mean, African country of Wakanda.
But even in Black Panther itself, though, like when Martin Freeman's character is interviewing Claw and he says, you know, like, what do you know about Wakanda? He's just like, shepherds, cool outfits, you know? So, like, nobody knows that. But that's definitely played out, too, in the post-credit scene where at the UN, where, you know, he's like, we're coming into the world now. And I don't know what country it was from, but, you know, random white man that's just like, well, what on earth can you offer us?
Right.
And he's like, dude, you better shut up. You know what? Your country doesn't get any.
But starting to wind down a little bit, are there any particular scenes or characters that we haven't really talked about Chadwick Boseman yet? And this is, I think that people are also saying that his speech at the SAG Awards is kind of propelling Black Panther forward. And, you know, he is definitely a great representative for this movie. And I think in the lead, they certainly give the supporting characters a lot to chew on here. Mm-hmm. But Chadwick Boseman, I think, does a wonderful job of presenting T'Challa and bringing him to the audience. Your thoughts on him in his role as Black Panther?
He's fantastic. I mean, like, from the second I saw him walk out on the El Capitan Theater between Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. when they first announced him, I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you see this guy in 42 or in Get On Up, I think it was the James Brown one, just an actor who disappears into the parts, and I knew he was going to be perfect at this. And the fact that, you know, he fought for the accent in the movie and everything, like, it's just great instincts and just, you're right, just a great human person that we can attach ourselves to.
Agreed. So I think one of our first introductions to him was 42 as well.
Yeah.
And so it actually, because of the fact that he gets lost in the character, it took me a while to realize that it was actually the same person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, no, you're right.
He was so good at it that, I mean, you just forget the other things that he's doing while he's playing that particular person, but he was phenomenal.
Yeah.
He was a great lead actor for the title character. Like, they couldn't have probably cast it any better. And I want to go back just really quickly. I mean, we can come back to this, to that discussion about tradition and keeping things quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I also think that it's a really smart thing for him to include in there as well, because there's also a little bit of that in the Black community more broadly. Like, there are certain things that you just don't talk about that happen. And some of that gets in the way of healing, and it gets in the way of family healing and things like that. And so I think that was a really subtle sort of line to get maybe members of other communities to think about the secrets that hold back sort of healing and getting over sort of things that happen as well.
Maybe
so.
It's more important to not maintain the lie, but to actually talk about,
face it, so that way you can deal with it.
Yeah, like that conjures up ideas to me of the arguments they have over Confederate monuments and stuff. And you know, oh, you, this is heritage. No, it's not.
Right.
it really is not. And I get it. I Lee wasn't all just racist, but he was.
Right.
So, you know, like, and I remember watching a documentary on Hamilton, and they were talking to the actors about how you can portray people who owned slaves. Mm-hmm. And I think David Diggs, the guy who plays Jefferson, yeah, had a line where he's just like, you know, you can have, on one hand, he was brilliant and eloquent and pulled our country into a place it never could have gotten without him. But then he also sucks.
Right.
You know?
So
like, yeah, at the same time. And so, yeah, like, and I love that you can get all those different things out of it. I thought of, you know, the silence in the Catholic Church for,
right,
the abuse scandal.
Exactly.
It doesn't have to permeate just to one culture.
Exactly.
And that's the beauty of the film. It can be anything you want it.
Exactly it.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other moments you want to highlight in the movie, or any particular performances that you want to highlight? I just can't say enough good things about Ryan Coogler. He, to me, is just
rockstar.
It's so great, too, because when this movie came out, there was an article going around from when he was a film student, and he said something like, he was at a conference and he was at a particular movie theater, and he said, essentially, I can't wait to come back and have my movies play in the,
yeah,
theater. And so just to, like, see his growth and development, Fruitvale Station, incredible film.
Fruitvale Station, people, if you haven't.
To me, Creed was one of the best films of 2015, and it was a Rocky movie, you know?
Right.
And then to have this, just incredible stuff from him.
And he's back for Black Panther 2.
Mm. Yeah, and then and just, I guess, kind of as a final point for wrapping up, him saying that himself and that circling around, we can imagine what this movie is doing for aspiring,
yeah,
directors, mm, you know? So it's about positive portrayal sort of all the way around, like what's possible sort of all the way around, and the ability, because, I mean, we've had, obviously, other Black directors, right? So
Spike Lee
finally, for example.
Oh, you know what I mean?
Yes,
but
so,
his first direct nomination this year.
I know.
Yeah,
that's the one I was thinking about, Spike Lee. So we've definitely had other sort of examples, but I think what this is demonstrating is that, because Spike Lee has always been a controversial director,
sure,
as well,
right,
and like a lot of his movies haven't certainly had the sort of widespread appeal that this particular movie, that Black Panther, has had. So I think we're also seeing, you know, for kids who are growing up, the possibility, like other options, other possibilities for them as well, and other, so behind the camera, and,
yeah,
and some of the other areas that you guys, that we were talking about earlier, and costuming, and so, mm-hmm, many other things that, mm-hmm, kind of give hope for, and maybe can actually bring that Afro-futurist idea to,
yeah,
fruition.
Yeah, and I think that's why it matters what happens at the Academy Awards this year. I mean, most of the time, look, it's the Oscars, arty films are going to win, whatever, nobody will see them. But I think it's important this year, because I think it's important not just that Black Panther's there, but you're right, like, as you said, there's an all-Black crew as,
yeah,
well.
Yeah.
And that's important.
Yeah.
Because, mm, if there's justice, it should win a lot of those statues.
Yeah.
Just based on objective movie, you know, movie reviewing and stuff.
Yeah.
And so seeing that up there, you know, you're going to have a whole generation of kids who've never seen themselves represented,
yeah,
at the Oscars that now finally will. I mean, God, there's been what, like three, like, I think, well, once Mahershala Ali now wins a second,
right,
one, like, there'll be like four or five African-Americans that have ever won,
yeah,
acting Oscars.
Well, and, you know.
And so, I mean, like, that's being able to see that represented up there and say, and also just a message to Hollywood that this works. Because,
right,
that was the,
exactly,
whole thing before Black Panther came out. Like, they won't come to,
no,
that. Like, this
no one's going
to
support,
and definitely
it,
not if you hire all African-American,
yep,
cast and crew. And lo and behold, $700 million later.
Right.
Well, so,
and we forget that Moonlight won because there was that, like, I mean, really,
right,
really, they didn't get their due.
Right.
I still think the Academy Awards really did a disservice by not, this past year, I thought they should have allowed Barry Jenkins to give his speech,
right,
to open the Oscars, because they didn't get that opportunity to,
no,
you know, such a weird, and like that controversy over La La Land versus,
right,
Moonlight, like it didn't allow that spotlight to be there. Right. And so I think that, and obviously that was more of an art film. That was more,
right,
of a Oscar, Beatty type film. But I still think it's important. And
yeah.
I loved A Star Is Born, And I wish that it didn't get snubbed as much as it did in the nominations. But I just think that this year, Black Panther makes so much sense for a Best Picture winner.
It does.
So.
And like I said, the fractured of the winners, like there's no consensus top front runner right now. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, like, I think it's got a legit shot.
And
I,
if it wins, it will, you know, because the Oscars also have sort of the Oscars So White hashtag a few years ago. Uh-huh. And at least its win would feel deserved and yeah. not like the Oscars like was just, trying no, to it would just feel, overcome. It would feel Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah. And if you want a great article on this, go to the Front Row website and read Lou Hare's article about why the Oscars needs Black Panther.
Right, right.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you so much
oh,
for being
thank
on.
For having
this
me.
Was incredible. So if you want to come and hang out with us on Oscar night,
yes.
Jeremy, give them the deets.
Yeah, so February 24th, Sunday, 6 p.m., we are partnering with the Hoagland Center for the Arts and throwing the Front Row Oscar Party. Now, look, I know you could watch it in the comfort of your own home, and, you know, your couch is comfortable. I get it. But you know what? You can't be with all the cool people at the front row if you're at home, and you also can't win awesome prizes. That's right. Every commercial break, lightning round trivia, beat Brandon Davis trivia, and you can win prizes.
You also can't
know.
See Jeremy in a sequined gown anywhere else.
I mean,
I don't know.
If we get enough tickets sold, I'm open to it. I'm open to it. But seriously, yeah, if you want tickets to it, go to hcfta.org and look for the Front Row Oscar Party. It is going to be a ton of fun. We've got a cash bar and a la carte food and the live broadcast and, of course, a ballot contest. Who knows, man? There's going to be prizes everywhere at this thing. So get your butt over there. Get some tickets.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you have any other shows you want to plug?
Oh, man. Just our Oscar spotlights that we're going to be doing. So we'll break down all of the big nominees and break down what their chances are at the big ceremony like we do every year. And then just find everything that we're doing Beyond the Mouse, Guilty Pleasures, Flashbacks, Classics, all the Front Row shows. Just go to the Front Row Network on Facebook or Instagram or Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, again, thank you so
thank
much
you.
For being here. I can't wait to see what happens at the Oscars and see where it goes from there.
Black
and I can't
Panther.
Wait to see Endgame, and I can't wait to see Black Panther 2. We've got such a great slate of yeah. movies coming out in the MCU. Of course, we've got Captain Marvel right around the mm-hmm. corner as well, and we'll be covering that. And just such amazing Disney movies coming out this year. And Lion King in July,
yeah, that's coming
Frozen
out.
2 in November, just so much to
Aladdin.
Cover and so much. Yeah,
Dumbo,
Aladdin, so much
God,
going on.
Disney's gonna make money this year.
Yeah. No one's even mentioned Star Wars Episode 9.
Ah, yep, that's this year too.
Yeah, it's just absolutely incredible.
Just print the money.
Right.
Absolutely. So, thank you so much again, and thank you for listening. Make sure to subscribe to our individual feed of Beyond the Mouse, and then also onto the Front Row Network as well. This should be posted on both of those, and we're gearing up here, and we're going to be covering so many movies for you in such a little time. It's going to make
right.
your head spin. But for the Front Row and for Beyond the Mouse, I am Craig.
I'm Jeremy Geckner.
And I'm Tiffany.
And we'll see you real soon in the Front Row.
This episode is a production of the Front Row Network, a proud Community Voices member of National Public Radio, Illinois. For more information and to see the full slate of Front Row Network shows, you can visit frnpod.com or nprillinois.org. You can also find and follow us on social media by searching for the Front Row Network on Facebook and Instagram, and Front Row Reviews with a Z on Twitter.